being in an all-male environment lifts, in so many cases, lifts that posturing from these boys and actually permits vulnerability, and it permits acceptance, honestly.
Everyone, welcome back to another episode. I am excited to have Nat Damon with me here. That is Nat with an N, not Matt Damon, just to clarify. Nat Damon, educator, and someone who works with young men around leadership, and I would say it's fair to say masculinity and what it means to be a young man and a man entering the world. So thank you for being here. Very excited about this topic.
Beautifully introduced. And yeah, I've gotten some really good tables at restaurants in Los Angeles. And ever since 1997, my life changed. Cause I'm also a Boston native. So not Matt. And I do remember once having the pleasure to interview Matt Damon's mother, who is world renowned as an early childhood educator. Her name is Nancy Carlson Page, and she is just an incredible inspiration. So for anybody out there who has children who are kindergarten age or younger, it might be great for you to listen to some of her podcasts or some, maybe read some of her articles or her books about raising her own kids, and how that applies to her work. But anyhow, I love, the fact that I'm here today to speak, with you about raising boys and being a positive example of male masculinity, modern masculinity, positive masculinity, not toxic masculinity. And I'm excited to walk down that path with you. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm inspired by people who do work like you, and they want to help expand that in the world. So I'm pleased to have you on. I would love to hear a little bit about how you got to where you are. And if you could maybe just ground us a little bit in what Reach Academy is and does, and then kind of how you got here, including
Beautiful.
Your early life. I'm hoping that that's included, because I'm sure that's part of the story.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll start with Reach Academy, actually, because that's really kind of why I'm here today, right? Is we've built this really, really wonderful community of young men in Los Angeles who every summer meet for about 4 weeks and focus on leadership and learning in a very growth-oriented, very positive, literal fraternity of boys entering grades 7 through 10. And we now have a few summer counselors who are entering senior year in high school to also be mentors for these what we call them, the Reachers. And we are a mixed socioeconomic status group of boys, very diverse, extremely reflective of the diversity in Los Angeles, both visible and unseen. And what that does is it absolutely contributes to a beautiful kind of mosaic of masculinity and malehood right in front of us. All the teachers and mentors are male identifying. All of the Reachers are male and identifying males. And we emerged, Reach Academy for Young Men came out of the pandemic, actually. We were a post-pandemic response to the 15 months in Los Angeles, the 15 months of remote learning and isolation. And at the time, I was the interim middle school director at a girls' school in Brentwood. And I was hearing a lot about the girls and just the mental health issues that they were facing during COVID and all of the pressures that just exponentially compounded on them during that 2020 and 2021 academic year. But then I started asking about their brothers. I was like, so, you know, I feel like I know a lot about what you're enduring, what you're, you know, kind of freighting with you. But I know you have a brother, you've got two brothers, and what's going on with them? And their stories about their brothers were equally kind of heart-rendering, in the sense that, you know, they were online, their connection with others was video games, their connection with others was trash-talking online, their connection to their own identities was you know, these influencers who really, like Andrew Tate and whatnot, who were truly feeding a flow of what you would not call positive masculinity or empowered. Yet they were alone. So they didn't have their social, their, you know, whether it's baseball team or their theater group or their fencing team or their, you know, volunteer activities where they were rubbing shoulders literally with each other. And that was really having an effect. So long story long right now, but just this idea of Reach Academy was, let's provide a haven for boys during the summer between being remote and being in person back in school again, to kind of kickstart them back into what it's like to be socialized, frankly. And here we are 3 summers later, and what we've evolved into is a non-for-profit that is focused on looking at male leadership through the lens of being a student. They take academic courses that are engineered toward engaging boys, and they're learning about leadership. And our mantra when it comes to teaching leadership is actually, instead of expanding yourself outward and being that quote unquote leader with the loudest voice and on the box, you actually do the opposite and you look within and you figure yourself out and you figure out through, you know, the idea that you're in a community where people are holding up mirrors to you. You're a fresh face in this fraternity here as a reacher. And therefore you get the benefit of people reflecting back to you who you are today. And that clarity is something you don't get in school, because, you know, when you go to school, you're like, oh, I remember you from eighth grade, or I remember your brother who was this way. And, you know, it's a fresh start. We don't know you. And by the end of these 4 weeks, you'll come out with, you know, I can identify 3 skills that I have that are strictly me, and I can leverage these skills into a leadership, quote unquote, identity that will help influence others to do good. So leadership, not being the loudest voice in the room, not being that example of be a man that I grew up with, which was such a narrow construct, it's actually taking that narrowness and just blasting it open broadly and saying you can be a leader by being a bookish, reflective, great listener. You know, you can be a leader by being the creative, the ideas guy, and then leave the execution of it all to somebody else. You can be a leader if you're not the smartest, you don't think you're the smartest brain in the room, but you know what? In many ways, and here are the 3 ways that we see you have excellent skills that will help you be a leader. So that's how Reach Academy came around. And my background is in education. 30 years as an educator and an administrator in schools in Boston, Los Angeles. I lived in London for 5 years. During that time, I wrote a book about relational pedagogy called Time to Teach, Time to Reach. Really focus on this idea that when we teach, and if we're putting our content aside, what are we really doing in our classroom to create an ethos where learning can be optimized? And that is all what relational pedagogy is. It's about instilling belief between teacher to student and student to teacher. It's not about being the nice teacher or being the friendly one or whatnot. It's really about just connecting, and connecting in a trust-based way. And how you do that is what Reach, my consultancy, Reach Academics, is all about. So I'll stop right there, but, and I know I haven't talked about my background, like my childhood background, but that is, definitely a factor into how Reach Academy came about as well.
One of the things that I really love about what you just pointed out was the shift, because I think the word leader and leadership gets confused or muddled in our culture. And I really liked what you said about leadership not being about being the loudest voice in the room, but being, what I heard you say was, being secure in oneself and acting authentically from one's authentic self and knowing who that is and trusting who that is. And please correct me if that's not, but I see you nodding, so other people can't see because it's a podcast. But I really like that shift, because I think, you know, a lot of the men that we work with and a lot of the work that we do is around leadership and leading and taking lead. And for many of us, I think that we conflate leading with dominating. We think of leading as dominating. And in my, you know, landscape, the way I think about it is sort of passive and aggressive, as, you know, scales on a continuum. And in the middle is leading. It is neither passive nor aggressive. It's offering, it's inviting, it's creating a space. And so I loved what you said about, you know, you can be a bookish and reflective, good listener leader. And I believe that is truly, that is real. When you are a good listener and you're just holding space, meaning just being with someone well, tends to invite out their truth. There's something about a quality of being, a way of being, particularly when you are comfortable with yourself and you've owned who you are. And to me, that's really what I feel is what you're describing is helping the boys or young men become who they are, become comfortable in themselves. And then the magic that ensues out of that, I would imagine is pretty extraordinary. So I'm sure we'll get there, but any reflections on that before we, I do want to ask you about your own, how you became the man you are.
Thank you. Wow. So many reflections. And I'll think just a couple that really stood out with what you were just sharing back is, I was thinking about leadership and this idea about being interested in other people being so fundamental toward leadership. And that's, maybe that doesn't go necessarily with personality, but that's more of a skill that I think should be more, frequently taught, to boys, especially, is this idea of curiosity and just leaning into, you know, like, you're fascinating, instead of you're threatening to me because you're different. It's more like, okay, that's a way of looking at something that I've never thought about. And that is fascinating. In order to get to that kind of level of connection, one needs to be in an environment of trust. You mentioned trust. And then before this podcast started recording, you and I had a conversation about hope and trust, both of which are actually two of the six elements of relational pedagogy. When I work with schools, it's looking at hope and looking at trust. And how do you engender an atmosphere of hope? How do you create a hope-filled atmosphere? And the men that we hire to work with our boys as teachers and mentors, we're always looking for that glimmer of hope that they possess that's unconditional, that's like there. So, you know, you may be a rough and tumble 14-year-old and you may be kind of the grappler who's like, you know, arms crossed and like defiant appearing, but a hopeful educator or a hopeful mentor will be able to see through that, maybe even see themselves at 14 years old and just be like, oh, I'm curious about why this person seems so oppositional. But I have hope that inside this young man is something that wants to come out, something that is a question that's stifling them, or is maybe an insecurity that they have. That being in an all-male environment, here's the other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking, is being in an all-male environment lifts, in so many cases, lifts that posturing from these boys and actually permits vulnerability, and it permits acceptance, honestly. And that's what we've seen at Reach Academy for Young Men. Now, there are boys boarding schools and traditional boys private schools that may not kind of be where we are because they are anchored back 150, 250 years. And so they have traditions and they have a culture perhaps that might be still kind of that old school mentality of how to raise a boy. But what Reach Academy is able to do in the summer in just 4 weeks is truly powerful and quite inspiring, because, you know, we're looking at how do we create an environment and a culture where vulnerability can be looked at not as something to fear and ward off, but actually something to learn from, to embrace actually about yourself. Like when you're being vulnerable, you are actually communicating to the group that you're with that you trust them, that they're not going to attack you as the weakest link, quote unquote, in the tribe. It's that you are safe, and maybe by expressing something that's been really plaguing you, you may grow, and you may actually grow in your character as well as a result. So anyhow, this idea of being an all male environment, as opposed to like a football team, rugby team, like rah, 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 it's more Ted Lasso than it is, you know, like, a New Zealand rugby team. You know, it's very much like we come together and we share and we grow and we realize that the sum is greater than the individual parts, yet the individual parts are pretty damn special.
Yeah. Well, one thing that occurs to me in your description there is that you could have the same boys and young men on a sports team, or you could have them at Reach Academy. And one of the differences is the mentors and the leadership. And it's not just about what you're saying. It's about who you're being. So there is a transmission when you and your team show up. There is an openness and a spirit of hope, right? There's a way that you're being that is inviting the group forward in a different way. And I think it's interesting, you know, neurobiologically to look at things like mirror neurons and the way that we co-regulate is it's not just woo-woo thinking. It really matters the way you show up with your mentors, let's say the high school seniors, right, that are supporting, and then the way that they show up, there is a cascade effect. And so the growth work that mentors do matters, and who they are matters, because that's coming into the room. And that's part of what's setting the tone. That is what's setting the tone, really. And so you could have the same group of boys and young men in both environments, and they're going to show up completely differently. And I'm wondering, yeah, if you are willing to share a little bit about how you were raised and how you kind of got to be who you are, because I'm imagining that, well, did you grow up with super healthy, you know, male mentors that you felt like demonstrated healthy masculinity and you just, you know, absorbed all of that? Or was there a bit of a journey for you around getting to where you are?
That's a great question. So I would say a mix of both. My family for sure had positive male mentors. My father just is the perfect mix of being sensitive to others' needs and attuned and a great listener. My dad is not the guy who's, you know, kind of commanding the table. And my twin younger brothers are the same. I mean, they're taller than I am. They're more athletic than I am. So they fit more, they check more of those kind of masculine boxes, but at the same time, like, incredible listeners. And even though they're identical twins, they're different personalities. So in a sense, I win, because whenever I need advice on something, I can go to both of them and get two correct, but maybe different answers, right? Definitely two different lenses. But I say without a doubt, honestly, my masculinity and my concept of masculinity was developed actually by having an older sister who had special needs. And my brothers, my father, my mom, my brothers and I particularly rallied around our older sister in a way of protecting her, in a way of learning from her and admiring her, in the sense that even despite her intellectual disability, she found joy in life and she absolutely found strength. And she was the strongest person that we know. My brothers would agree, because she would make it through the day and capitalize on it and have an amazing and look at life through a beautiful lens. So that's in my family structure. The other kind of real lesson for me about masculinity growing up was the difference between my middle school, which was a very traditional all boys middle school, where going through it was really challenging because it was absolutely the archetypes of being a man. I mean, you know, if you're playing outfield and on a baseball team, you know, it's like the coach would be like, "What are you sniffing daisies out there, Damon? Like, you know, get up, you know, be, you know, and all of that, like just different kind of moments of that kind of shame filled, stiff upper lip, be a man." And that's okay. That's fine. This was the 80s. And it was, you know, these teachers, most of them were post-war, Second World War, you know, growing up. So I can sympathize. But at the same time, I had an offset, which was my all boys overnight camp, Camp Beckett out in Western Mass. And even as a 15-year-old, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old, I knew that I was growing more during those 4 weeks in overnight camp in an all-male environment than I did during the school year. And that was just because we were able to exhale, and and a camp by nature has room to run, and, you know, activities, and, you know, whether it's, you know, the ropes course, or whether it's the waterfront, or whether it's ultimate frisbee or camping, you know, overnight camping, it's all of it. So you're getting all your kind of energy out, and you're bonding with boys in a way that you just don't have opportunity to in school, unless you're like on a team. Right. And, because in my experience, my classrooms weren't necessarily like super bonded, you know, it was very competitive and whatnot in a very old school male kind of way. So Camp Beckett was amazing. And if I were to give one anecdote that taught me about modern kind of leadership and masculinity, it was at the end of every day at Beckett, we would have what you call cabin chat, where all eight of the campers would be in their bunk beds, each, you know, one bunk bed in every corner. And the counselor and the CIT, the counselor in training, both of them, the mentors, would come out in the middle of the room with a candle. And all you see are the glimmer in the eyes of the campers and counselors. You don't see anything else. It's pitch black except for that in the candle. And so that promoted listening in a way that, like, boys are not known to have even the capacity to listen, right? But here I saw every night the capacity to listen and boys being able to achieve that. And, you know, the questions that they would throw out would not be right or wrong, but they would be just be like, what are your thoughts about this? You know, and every boy had a chance to speak and know that he would be listened to by his cabin, you know, at that cabin chat time. So that's what I kind of also hang as a real kind of tempo moment for me growing up about, being a mature man is this ability to listen and this ability to be non-judgmental and this ability to be curious and to lean in. It's possible. So when I'm talking with school leaders today and in my consulting and I'm hearing, you know, a head of school recently, I was in a conversation with a head of school who sat me down. And he's like, look, you know, it's obvious, like we both know that boys really don't have a rich inner life. And I'm like, in my head, it was like, au contraire, like, are you kidding? And you're ahead of the school? Like, no, that's totally not true. Boys have as rich an inner life as girls do. It's differently, manifests differently. But it is 100% there. And I think that anybody in the audience, in your audience here who has sons or who, you know, who's male identifying, recognizes that. And in a sense, we don't as a society honor it. And I think that there are there are so many opportunities that are untouched to help boys grow up in a healthier environment that understands this and that, you know, provides kind of a safe environment for that inner life to be expressed.
Wow, there's so many things I loved about that. One was actually teared up with the cabin chat in part because, it strikes me that we are all capable of connecting in that way. And we just need the structure for it. It's like, and we're all going around hungry for a connection, and our culture doesn't have that many places where we can get that deep need for connection met. And it just, you know, yeah, it just occurs to me, a candle and a room and a question and each person sharing changes the molecules in the room.
That's the mirror neurons you were talking about earlier. That's the mirror neurons at play.
And the other thing I loved about what you said was being a mature man is this ability to listen and be non-judgmental and curious. And that is, I mean, if we took that in our culture as this is what a mature man is, our entire culture would change because that is not what we're taught, right? To your point, I think, again, we come back to that archetype of leader. When we think of leader, we think of someone talking. We don't think of someone listening. And if you flipped it on its head and you said leadership is the ability to draw people out. Leadership is the ability to hear from everyone in the room in a meaningful way. Leadership is the ability to create sacred space. That would change everything. That would change how we teach leadership courses. And I think there is a lot that is changing about it and has been, but If you were to go poll 100 people in North America about what is a leader, that would likely to be low on the list of qualities that they would list, unless they were actually thinking about real leaders in their lives. Then I would imagine that being a good listener would rank, because it is part of when you actually think about leaders we respect, it often has that quality to it. And then I really appreciated that part about boys have as rich of an inner life as girls do. And I think this is just such a perfect example of, you know, the patriarchy in action, which we sort of all embody in different ways of assuming things about boys or men that aren't true. And I'll give you an example from our men is consistently what I find is that for most of the men we work with, they need an emotional connection with a woman in order to have fulfilling sex. If they don't have an emotional connection, it's not fulfilling. And sometimes they don't even want to be sexual. But the messages are all, if you can have sex as a man, you should have it. Like, you're supposed to want it all the time and all this stuff. And so they're left with this feeling of like, is there something wrong with me? because I want something else or I need something else, even to feel sexual, right? Even to get aroused. It's like, I need some kind of connection with this person. That's who I am. And I'm wondering, I would say, my guess is that it's probably the majority of men that feel that way, but they all feel like the minority. So there's something kind of strange and off about that order. And then the last thing that I really loved was that you mentioned that your concept of masculinity was developed by having an older sister with special needs and witnessing her moving through the world. And it sounds like feeling protective of her, but also just admiring who she was. And I'm curious if you can say a little bit more about that, about how that, you know, because that's so fascinating about, you know, my concept of masculinity was deeply shaped by this. In what way would you say that that was true?
I think that when you think about masculinity, the first, one of the first words that comes to my mind is strength, and for better and for worse, right? Like the rah-rah strength, like, you know, Popeye, like the man, He-Man and Ben, all the stuff growing up, G.I. Joe. And my sister had so much strength in her. Like, it wasn't, because I may have presented it more like, oh, you know, she was always happy with, you know, kind of happily jaunting her way through every day of her life. That's not what I'm really saying is she had strength. She had courage. She had ferocity. She had tenacity. Lynn absolutely walked through life with from her heart leading, her courage, her heart forward, but in a way that was so admirable for me and my brothers, like growing up as boys to young men, as boys to men, and having Lynn at kind of the oldest sibling, and in that sense, leading the way while also needing our protection and counting on it without ever verbalizing it, put us in a position where we could be the protector man, boy, but brothers, but also really admire and learn from how she, as a quieter, more dependent person, actually was so strong. So this idea of, maybe it's just kind of similar to what we were talking earlier about leadership, not necessarily being the loudest man in the room. What is strength? It doesn't necessarily mean like you're physically, you know, there's physical strength, sure. And we can talk about, you know, boys growing up in this age of visual, you know, the six pack, the eight pack, the needing to be, you know, and influenced by porn and all. But when I think about my sister and I'm thinking about her strength, it's absolutely that strength that comes from within her. And how can I have some of that as I make it through my very meta dominated, metacognitively dominated, ego dominated way of navigating through my high school hallway? How can I have some of what Lynn had? If I did, I would certainly feel more solid and grounded in my 2 feet.
I love that. There's something powerful about that element of grace. Grace is the word that I hear in that, of the way that she carried herself and the way that she, I don't know if I would say was forced to, but it's sort of like, yeah, when you're navigating something like that, especially so young, you do have to find that inner sense of determination and power. And it's going to look different because you are interdependent, right? She wasn't able to be fully self-reliant. So there's a certain grace to navigating, I need you and I'm here for you too. I need you and I'm here for you too. And that interdependence, I think, is really where we need to go as a culture. And there is a balance. There's a balancing act there. I want to make sure. You first.
I was going to say just one thing that before I forget, just I want to share is that this growing up with Lynn also was this lesson for my brothers and I about being helpful. And this idea of this masculine kind of, I believe that that is something that also is worth exploring, is this wanting to be of service, this wanting to be of a helpful young man, a helpful man in the world. Loyola and the Jesuits have this focus, this mission about doing unto others and having that kind of leader way. And so I just want to also add that just this growing up with a always needing to be of service to help our sister navigate was something also that contributed to our sense of what masculinity is. So.
That's a great point, because you had a constant and consistent opportunity to provide and not all boys have that in the same way, especially someone very close to you where you can see the effect immediately, right? Like there's something really powerful about living with that and having that on the daily. I want to shift gears a little bit because I want to talk about Reach Academy and in particular, kind of what you're seeing in the boys and young men with whom you work. I'm curious about the programming that you do. And if you do kind of explicitly touch on ideas of masculinity and what the boys show up with versus what they leave with, do you actually talk explicitly about that? What does it mean to be a man? What has it been like for you? Who are your male role models? And what kinds of patterns are you seeing in their answers?
That's a great question. Yes, we do. We do. We don't approach it from a top down, like this is what masculinity is. It absolutely, it's kind of like our cell phone policy, where we didn't want to come as top down, say no phones, but we wanted no phones, as distractions. And if we're really building a fraternity and, anyhow, so we definitely had this, the Reachers kind of come up with their own, cell phone policy that was reflective of their belief in terms of, well, we use our cell phones when we're feeling avoidant, when we're feeling depressed, and when we're feeling excluded or marginalized. So what do you do when you see somebody who's on their phone at Reach? Well, you presume that they are feeling marginalized or depressed so what will you do? Well, I'll go over and say, let's play ping pong, or there's a foosball table over here. Let's play foosball. Let's just go for a walk around the block. Like that came from them. And that was such an awesome way of addressing why we don't have mobile phones being used at Reach. So that's similar, right, to how we talk about masculinity. Because, you know, what's comforting for me and for the other adults and the mentors is knowing that there are a dozen of us who are just by being with the boys are modeling something that they can look toward, right? Being an all-male group, all-male identifying, we've got just, so we know that by default, these boys are watching us, and that alone is positive, as males, as men, adult males. And yet the way we teach masculinity is very much looking at masculinity as distinct and something that is, getting back to the of service part, something that is beneficial. And how can we make it beneficial? And what we've noticed when we talk with our boys about how they view themselves as young men, there is definitely this idea, and some boys mentioned, like, okay, it means being quiet. It means crossing my legs, closing my legs. It means, you know, not talking. You know, it means walking down the hallway and seeing the future is female, you know, stickers everywhere, but and then being labeled toxic. So it means like just not standing out, like in the classroom, because the teachers generally send the boys to the office or, you know, address them with discipline than the girls. So all of which, you know, is they're speaking their truth and it's their narrative, but you weave it all together and you have this definite perspective that boys are growing up feeling more self-conscious and more seeking more ways to escape that, and understandably seeking more ways to escape that judgment put on them by society at large. And they're boys. They're not, you know, their prefrontal cortex isn't going to come together until they're 25. So like, you know, how can we help them without having them feel like overly indulged? How can we help them though to see again the positive elements of being a man in this world, while at the same time addressing the roots of where this toxic masculinity comes from, right? And it's interesting because these boys grew up, regardless of what political side you lean on, and I really mean this, we've got, you know, Republican families and Democrat families and everything in between represented at Reach. And that's great because it's this is America. This is our individuality coming through. But all of these boys have grown up with up to half of their waking life, you know, with a president or presidents who are not emulating what honest, authentic masculinity is as personality, not as policy. And that's so important also in terms of why Reach was founded, because we are also kind of countering the kind of social narrative out there that is honestly, like, it's really hard to find really positive male role models for these boys to grow up in. And that is where also we're serving a need in that way.
One of the things that really stood out to me from what you just shared was boys are growing up feeling more self-conscious and seeking more ways to escape. And I feel like there's, yeah, there's an interesting dovetailing effect with things like social media being so ubiquitously present at the same time that it does feel like it's confusing to be a boy or a young man right now. I think there's a certain amount of confusion. What is my role? Where do I fit? What can I provide? You know, who am I? How can I be of value? Like, where is my place? What is my place? And I'm curious if you, you know, see a shift in boys over the time that they are with you over the 4 weeks, or also you tend to work with boys also during the school year, but I think the 4 weeks is probably a pretty pivotal time. Do you sense a shift in them as they kind of use the word exhale earlier, being in an environment where you can just exhale? Do you sense an inherent shift in them? Do you sense, what kinds of shifts do you see in the boys? And if you have an anecdote or two about, you know, transformations that you've seen, what are some of the ways that you see them shift, particularly around this idea of feeling self-conscious versus feeling fill in the blank? I don't know what word you would use, self-assured perhaps.
Yeah, I like that, self-assured, very much. I would say, it's funny, the first 2 days are always quiet, right? They're always just kind of like looking around, like, because we, you know, we have about 20 schools represented with 30 boys. And so therefore most boys are coming as singletons from their schools. And so again, it's that blessing and a curse, right? Like they are coming in like, oh gosh, you know, it's a whole group that know nothing about me and how am I going to be accepted or not? But it's also such a blessing because as we talked earlier, this idea of having all these eyes looking at you from a fresh perspective, like inevitably they're going to learn about themselves in ways that they just haven't in school the year before. Like they're just going to learn about how they come across, how they show up, right? So it's funny though, because 2 days, you know, kind of more quiet, more like definitely going by the rules. Like some of the shirts are tucked in and the polo shirts are actually like collars are actually down and all that. But then like day three or so, like we have a closing circle. We call it common ground at the end of every day. And it definitely is taking the cabin chat model and, you know, where every boy gets absolutely guaranteed that they will be listened to by everybody in the Reach community at the end of the day. And I just remember like, so in the middle of the day, we have our physical wellness when it's a 10-minute walk to this park that we go to called Roxbury Park. And it's a 10-minute walk and, you know, it's okay. It's a walk. It's a warm up. And then they're out there playing games or whatever and team building. And then they walk back. And I just remember the first year, like it was after 2 days of being relatively quiet. And then at the end of the third day, you know, we were like, what are some of the highs and the lows of your day? And one boy was like, hey, is it okay if I just say that, like, I just kind of felt like the walk to Roxbury Park was just, it's just long. It just feels so long. And without missing a beat, the boy next to him kind of elbows him and just goes, walk faster. Done. And like everybody's like laughing. And that broke the ice, right? And that's also kind of such a special thing about being around boys is like that there's the jokey part. There's the quick wit. And it, you know, you can only be witty if you feel comfortable with your audience. And so that broke the ice. And from then on, like, oh, it's a lot more loose and it's a lot more like, yeah, you know, it is a walk, but walk faster. You know, stop complaining. You know, we don't need to have a conversation about this. So, you know, just as an example, and I think that just watching them, they're also like, as I mentioned earlier, it's a very mixed socioeconomic population at Reach, and it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful, because you get the kids coming in from the Palisades, and you get the kids taking the bus from Echo Park, and they meet up in Beverly Hills, and they really honestly don't care about, you know, kind of zip codes and where they're coming from, whether they're, you know, at the top of the economic spectrum or near the bottom. It's just, who are you? Are you cool? And we had a great common ground about that. Like, are you cool? What is cool? What do you guys mean by that? And they just, that's their concept of masculinity, which I think we can all emulate too. Like if you're cool, it means your feet are on the ground. You're feeling like you're able to observe the world with a broader spectrum, a broader view, perspective. And you're therefore more curious than defensive. You're more listening than loud. You're you're just like, ah, okay, the world is kind of cool. You're kind of cool. You're not like me, but you don't have to be like me. It's, you know, you're just, you seem good. I trust you. You know, and that's where the authenticity comes in as a contributor to respectful masculinity. It's like, you know, I don't feel twitchy around you because I sense that you are comfortable with yourself. And I'll leave with that part, which is at the end of these 4 weeks, every one of our reachers gets a letter from each of their teachers and mentors. And what that letter, it follows a similar pattern or template, which is basically like, this is how I saw you at the beginning of our time together, and this is how I see you now. And without a doubt, these letters are some of those powerful pieces of evidence that these boys get. And for many of them, it's like the most powerful that they've received ever, because it's in writing, it's on paper. At the same time, it's handed out kind of ceremonially at the end of the 4 weeks. And at the same time, the parents get a PDF emailed to them. So they have this knowledge of what their boys are bringing home. And these letters have like just some beautiful anecdotes and it's proof that that these boys have been seen. So that is, you know, more than a report card and more than a transcript and a GPA is so, it's such a tool toward an improved sense of who you are. And these boys get a lot of letters because they over the course of 4 weeks, they have a lot of teachers. So they also have kind of that Rashomon kind of effect, which gives them such a multidimensional view of themselves too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that intention around having them feel seen. And I imagine there was a lot of intention brought by you and the other mentors of how do we have them feel seen? And you mentioned mirroring and reflecting. And I'm curious if you can share a little bit about, are there practices or how do you help the boys share with one another what they see and how their being is affecting others?
I default back to, again, to common ground at the end of the day, because we really do, this is kind of a top down at the beginning of the 4 weeks, is we do set the norms for common ground. And we highlight how powerful it is when, like, isn't it powerful when your teacher remembers something that you said in class from yesterday, you know, or something, you know, that you said, like, that might've been a one-off, but the fact that they remember it and they recite it back to you, isn't that powerful? And let's see if we can also kind of emulate that kind of, it's almost like you're creating a web because we're in a circle and you're just basically, we've done it also where you're like, you pass a football, you know, or something. And so you have the web being created and it's, isn't that a great feeling when your words are recited back to you by somebody else? So that's what I think about.
I love that too, because, you know, we talked about maturity being the ability to listen and be non-judgmental. And it feels like a simple way of training the boys and young men of this is how you do it. Yeah, is, right. Is listening to what someone said and then saying something about it.
Like, got it. Got
showing it. Showing them that you remember that there's this thing that they said. I'm curious if you, in the 4 weeks, touch on anything around sexuality, dating, relationships, things like that, or if that comes up, are there forums where they can ask any question they want of the mentors and what kinds of things they ask?
We do have anything goes. Like there are times where you can ask a mentor anything. These relationships that are made with, and these are, by the way, our mentors are expert teachers in some of the best schools around LA. We also have some who are experts in their field that might not be education, but might be leadership coaching, or we have somebody who's teaching a class on the law, who's an LA Superior Court judge. So it's pretty incredible how just, and we have a screenwriter who teaches a class on writing for superheroes. So it's a really great kaleidoscopic view of like professions. And actually one thing that we offer as well is a speaker series where we have people come in and talk about their profession. And what we ask is that they don't come in and just talk, like, it's not like career day. We're like, this is what I do. And aren't I awesome? I have a corner office in Century City and it's just so cool. But more actually telling more about the circuitous route to success, like, you know, highlight two failures in your, that you encountered, and then what you learn from them. And then how do you apply what you learn from those failures every day into what you do in your from your corner office at your production studio. So anyhow, that's a way that people can help actually us is, you know, if they want to volunteer and share kind of a bit about themselves with our reachers, it's so inspiring to have, these adults, professionals come in. So, our boys in that way learn to listen as well. They learn to take notes when somebody's speaking. They show the respect that comes with when you open your notebook and somebody's about to speak. And, you know, that's a nonverbal way of showing that I care and I'm paying attention to you. And they learn little elements like that, through the course of the Summer Institute with us. So.
Yeah. And then do you notice any patterns around what the boys are asking about when it comes to sex, dating, relationships, things like that? Like, do you create a space for that, or is it organically comes up? I'm curious about those conversations.
Yep. Sorry. I lost track here because, I was thinking about just how we encourage, deep conversation, because in order to have a conversation about sexuality and attraction and relationships, you got to have that, deep trust in your conversations, right? And so it's informal. We don't offer a class about relationships or about dating or about sexuality, but it is, I like to think that the ethos at Reach is one where, if you have a question about that, you can identify either a mentor or you can talk to a peer in a way that is not going to be, you know, you're not going to be deflected. You're not going to be marginalized by asking a question like that. This year, we're also expanding Reach we're expanding the definition of being part of the Reach community way beyond the 4 weeks. So, related to your question is this notion that if you go through our program, our institute in the summer, and you are a Reacher, what you also take with you is the guarantee that if you were to text anybody else in the Reach community, whether it's a mentor or a peer with a question, or I'm struggling in this or whatever, you will be responded to immediately. Like, that is a pledge, and that is something that the kids sign off on, and they promise that that is going to be upheld during the course of the school year. And that is what we're really looking to build and develop, is how Reach can extend beyond the 4 weeks of the mountaintop kind of feel and have it be this fraternity that serves as an energy source, a source of collaboration, a source of collegiality that goes beyond, that goes, you know, day by day, year round, so that nobody is alone. That loneliness, the topic of loneliness, male loneliness, is something that we're really trying to address head on with these boys. And also it benefits the mentors too, actually, the adults too.
Yeah, I can, you know, speak to that on a personal level, but I feel more connected to humanity when I'm helping a client. And I feel more connected to my own humanity when I'm helping a client. So it's not a one-way exchange. There is an exchange of energy. And I appreciate that you brought up that topic of loneliness, because it is such a big deal right now. And I think that it's interesting because in actuality, these boys and young men in some ways feel more isolated than ever. And, you know, it's like, then you graduate and then you're even more isolated, right? It's like, it doesn't sort of stop. And so, yeah, I'm curious if you actually address that topic head on. Do you talk to the boys about loneliness and disconnection and isolation, you know, out loud, or is it sort of implied? Because it's, you don't want to intimidate people, but you also want to say, you know, you want to build and maintain your male friendships on an ongoing basis, because it's easy to lose them.
Yes, absolutely. And this gets back to me thinking about that mobile, the cell phone conversation that we had earlier. And when do you flip to your phone is how we framed it. And it's when I'm feeling lonely, right? And these boys are growing up absolutely when they're at Reach, they will say like, wow, that's such a cool answer to this question I have about, and it might not be about relationships or sexuality, but it's about something personal to them, right? Like, you know, my dog's about to die and I don't know how to grieve, you know, what is grieving? We definitely have had that question before. And, you know, I'm getting a deeper answer and from the people right here sharing space with me than I get off of Reddit. And that is also what we're trying to combat head on, is the value of interpersonal dialogue versus it's, as you see, like the immediate reaction when somebody has a question, they go right to their phone. Like, obviously, like that's just how they're growing up. It's the tech, it's right there. There's the answer. And we know as adults, and I know as an adult who grew up half my life analog without any of this, you know, you got to be media savvy, right? And you're not going to, you know, it's not going to necessarily be the right answer, or it might be answering the question you think you're asking, but a mentor will be able to really actually be able to tease out what the real question is, which doesn't happen when you're flipping to Reddit or Quora or, you know, Snap or whatever, or TikTok or any of that. Like, so we do talk about that. We're going to talk about that more too with these boys this year, because it's just been so explosive. And also, this is a political year in terms of presidential race and all of that. And so we're going to talk about where do you get your information from? You're not voting age yet, but you certainly have a voice and you certainly have opinions that are formulating. Where do you go and how do we kind of sift through this? So, and this also gets back to what you said earlier about leadership being about drawing people out. And that resonates with me so much as an educator, because, and this is what we're doing at Reach as well. It's the root word of educate is educare, which means to draw out, actually. So it's not education like I'm stuffing the goose, you know, I'm not opening up their brains and stuffing in information and yay, I've succeeded as a teacher. You know, so much of actual and effective teaching and learning comes from this this image of the teacher drawing out what the student might already know, but just never really articulated or never grasped or never connected together. So with these boys, we're focusing on that as well. Like, what can we draw out of them and then work with that they individually bring to the community? And how can we weave it together, braid it together, and solidify this fraternity that we're building here?
I love that. I didn't know that about the Latin. I assume it's a Latin root for educare. And that tracks with, I love what you said about, you know, Reddit can't draw out the root of the question. So there's the question you're asking, and then there's usually the question underneath the question you're asking, or the feeling that's coming up. And I can, you know, attest to that. You mentioned grief, and part of what we've seen in many of our clients is there's almost always unfelt or unresolved grief that's living in their system, and it's often blocking them from what they want. So they'll talk about what they want and we'll feel into what's under that and we'll ask them about grief. And so sometimes they're like, how did you get what's happening? But they can feel the truth of it. Or I'll give you another example. You know, how do I get more second dates? It's not happening for me. I feel like I'm only getting first dates, or it's hard for me to get dates. And it's like, tell me about your relationship to your sexuality. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about that part of you? And almost inevitably, it's shame. Yeah. Right? I feel some kind of shame around it. And so it's like learning to work with that and resolve that. That's not what you're going to read online about how to get a second date. You're going to read about how to interact with someone, and you're going to read about a lot of the surface level stuff, and you're not going to read about that deeper level, which is, I think, part of why it's so important for all of us to have quality mentors that we trust, that
yes,
get to hope, because we can spin our wheels. You know, one of the things we talk about in our work is information isn't transformation. So you can consume a lot of podcasts, you can consume a lot of books, you can read, you can do a lot of consuming information, but that's not going to lead to transformation. And one of the things that does is working with mentors. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the letters you mentioned, is having mentors that are older and arguably wiser gift you their reflections of how we have seen you transform over these 4 weeks is such a gift, because it's such a reminder of, wow, I am valued I am seen, I am valued, and there's hope for me, right? It's like, wow, if I can do this, I can do other things in my life. So it's not just, well, I'm so seen and valued, this is so great, but it's also like, I'm, you know, you can't see me, but I'm straightening my spine up, right? It's like, okay, I feel my feet on the ground more. I feel my own essence. And I think for male identifying people, part of your essence is your masculinity. That's part of it. It's just feeling that. So I really like that gifting of a mentor to people who are transformed. I can say, for example, I've worked with many of my clients for years now. And one of the things that I'm able to provide, especially in times when they're discouraged or they're feeling hopeless or it's not working, is, and look how far you've come. And just in the past 2 years, I've witnessed you transform in these ways and seen you grow in these ways. And you can just sense they light up in a certain way because it's like, oh, that's right. This person that knows me really well is reflecting my greatness back. And there's something about that. We call it the sunshine effect in our work. And I imagine there's a lot of that at Reach as well, of really just,
that.
Yeah, just really just reflecting a boy's greatness back to him.
Yep.
He might not have seen it in that way. And that's deeply transformative in and of itself. And then the last thing I wanted to say was, I love that pledge about you will be responded to. If you reach out, you will be responded to. And there's something about that so primal, that need to be responded to, that need for empathy, that isn't always honored in some family systems. And so to have that kind of stated aloud. Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, if there is a pattern, and maybe there isn't, that what are the things that boys are texting their mentors about? Is it, I'm sure it runs the gamut, but I'm just curious because you did mention, you know, Generation Z, like this is Gen Z we're talking about, growing up with technology, growing up with iPads, growing up with all of this stuff. I'm just so curious, you know, are they asking different questions? Is there a pattern to what they're asking about? Or is it just sort of all over the map?
It's kind of all over the map in the sense that it could be a question to a teacher, like there was a class, about the personal statement last year that was really aimed at kids kind of being able to write about themselves in a narrative based way. Right. That's like, I know that the teacher who taught that class would receive a text from a kid being like, I'm struggling with a paper, right. A paper topic. Right. So there's that, there's the academic, and that's super helpful actually, because it's not, they might not be able to have a tutor, you know, this is somebody that they trust and that they really like. Another thing that is just the Reachers really like the teachers and the mentors in our program. It's just amazing to watch how they light up when they see them. And in fact, as a result, all of our teachers are returning this year, which is tremendous because it just shows how much they value that relationship that's been built. That the potential of relationship, that hope filled relationship that gets built at Reach. So, but then there's also, you know, and we're going to be encouraging this more this year, but this idea of the community being something that's going to be the 12 months day by day. But what they are looking for and what boys need is to be seen and to be heard, to your point, to feel that sunshine effect. Not just during these 4 weeks, but during the course of the year. I accept you. I hear you. I will respond to you. That is a way of seeing you. That is a way of connecting, a way of saying you are important. I will get right back to you. It may seem so small. And this is actually, if you don't mind, I'd love to just, I know that your audience has a lot of fathers and a lot of dads out there and a lot of, and it's so understandable. So a lot of teachers that I work with feel this need to, some of the most uncomfortable parts of their day is when a student is working on something, the teacher knows the answer and the teacher just wants to give that answer, right? And it's just so, time just slows down to a trickle when a teacher is watching a student struggle with a math problem or an answer to a short answer question, that they just get it. This is it. Like, I just want to help you by giving the answer, right? And I equate that to, I'm thinking about the dads, you know, we don't value outwardly enough the immense power of sharing space and showing up and just being there. I just lost my father-in-law. My sister passed away 3 years ago at the beginning of COVID. I know what it's like to grieve. I've been through this recently. And I know every single person that either wrote a card or just sent me a text saying, I feel you, buddy. Like, let's, you know, I'm here. I didn't care what the card said. Who cares? Like, I mean, I care that they took time to write a beautiful card, but a one liner is it. That's it. That's everything. So, I was out with a friend of mine recently who was talking about his grandfather, and this friend of mine lost his father at 9 years old, decades ago, and at 9 years old. And he was fishing, he grew up in Texas, and he was fishing, and his grandfather came out to go fishing with him just after his father had died. And 9 years old, and the grandfather, my friend, it gets teared up talking about this story because nothing happened. He's fishing with his grandfather side by side. Not a word was spoken. About 2 hours in, my friend said to his grandfather, do you miss my dad as much as I do? Or is it okay to miss something? Some question like that. And that just led to, and it wasn't a deep discussion either, but it was just, that's how long it took, first of all, right? Like the teacher waiting for the student to get the right answer, the grandfather could easily be feeling the same way. Like time just ticks so slowly when you're just not saying anything. But the side by side, the presence of being there, and here 40 plus years later is my friend reflecting and getting teary on his, that those tears were love for his grandfather, 100%, and saying he was there. So as dads out there, that's what these boys need. I mean, if we have a video that we made last year, and one of our reachers directly says, I do not have a father or a male role model in my life. And thank God for Reach, where I can connect with male adults in a way that fulfills an emptiness in my life. Like he says it straight out, just being there. There's no script. There's no perfect words. It's just, that's what we remember. So, you know, as a takeaway, this idea of boys in an environment for 4 weeks, yes, that will continue through the year, absolutely, as part of a community. But if they can all have that memory that they were seen, they were heard, they were trusted, they were hoped in and believed in, and by mentors who were just, they were just there. They showed up and were just there. That's the advice I would give to all the dads out there. Whatever your marriage situation is, whatever your, you know, living situation is, whatever your work situation is, your sons will remember if you were there. That's it. They're not going to remember what you said. It's like what you say to teachers. Like they're not going to remember what you taught them, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
Yeah. And I would add also, not just for the dads, but I think that I'm inspired by a lot of our clients and our graduates. And one of the things that I would love to see them do is volunteer and mentor and coach, assistant coach, you know, get around environments where you can just be around boys and young men and just be the transmission of who you are and actually listen and elicit, you know, coax them out, all of the things that we're talking about, because that is of such deep service. And providing that alternate role model for some kids, yeah, it is going to be the only role model that they see of this kind of power, because I think that's really what it is power with versus power over, is something we had another guest talk about. Yeah. And that feels like very much what this is. And, you know, that's, I think, especially true and relevant when there is turmoil, when there is something going on. You know, one of our clients had the mantra, my kids will be okay no matter what. And this was as a divorce was happening. It's like, I am claiming this in the world. My kids will be okay no matter what, because I'm going to be there. And because I'm gonna do my best. And that was really helpful. And it's interesting. I was reading some social science research about young people, meaning I think it was looking at teenagers, and they said a young person only needs one adult mentor who truly sees them in order to help anchor their sense of self. It can be a coach, it can be a teacher, it doesn't have to be a parent, but they need someone who actually sees them. And I remember one of my friends sharing essentially about her version of that, which was a teacher at her school who she was talking to at some point. And he said, are you aware that you always have your head down when you're in the hallways? And she thought to herself, I literally thought I was invisible. I couldn't believe that someone saw me in the hallways and noticed, and she said it was a light bulb moment. Her life was different after that moment of being seen. And she was what, like 16, 15 or 16 years old. But there's such a power in that, you know, being present and able to be with ourselves allows us to see others. And that is a gift. That is, we can be of service just by noticing other people and naming that and sharing that in a non-judgmental way.
And I wonder with boys, I wonder if if there's an assumption that people make about boys, like, oh, well, I don't want to coddle them. They need to grow up to be rugged individualists, right? Like they're boys, going to be men. And so I don't want to, but really what they're seeking, this gets back to the whole inner world, rich inner life of boys. They do want to be seen. They won't say it. Many of them don't say it, but they do, of course. It's a human need for that neural connection. And it's Ali Sheedy in The Breakfast Club. I'm not sure if that's one of your movies that you've enjoyed growing up with, but for me, growing up with The Breakfast Club or any John Hughes movie, but Ali Sheedy's character is like, you know, my parents are horrible to me. And Emilio Estevez's character is like, what, do they abuse you? Do they physically or emotionally abuse you? And she's like, dramatic pause. And she goes, they ignore me. And she's 16 and that's it. And he's like, oh, right. You're invisible. You don't matter.
Yeah, I do love that movie. I feel like I remember watching that movie and then just sitting for 10 minutes and thinking about it after the movie credits ran. So as we start to wrap here, I want to know how people can support or get involved if they are in the LA area. And then I think that you do some online stuff. I know that a lot of our men are kind of always looking for because they're doing personal growth work themselves, how do I get my boys into this in a way that actually makes sense and feels held?
Great. Well, first of all, I mean, if anybody has boys in their lives who are entering seventh grade through 10th grade and are in the LA area, and this, after this conversation, are interested in learning more about us, you can hit up our website. It's reachyoungmen.org. reachyoungmen.org. And then also we're looking to build a community of dads in particular, but it could also be, we haven't finalized this yet, but it could just be men who work with boys or who have, you know, uncles or whatnot who are mentors or want to be better mentors. And we want to build also a supportive community for those adults in the boys' lives in a way that they can figure out, like, just how, you know, express their challenges, find healing and find answers in a very fun way, like, you know, bowling and beers or something, or, you know, just in a way it could be gathering, and then in another event could be an event like, you know, movie night or something, but where we talk afterwards. And then we will also, as I said before, we'll continue with programming during the course of the year for Reach, definitely for the Reachers who were with us in the Summer Institute. Yet we'll also open up to other boys who may be seeking what we have and just weren't able to join us in the summer. We cap at 30 boys, and then we also add 5 summer counselors going into senior year. We have a dozen teachers and mentors, adults in the community, all male identifying, and we're accepting applications right now. They come with recommendation requirements. They come with, you know, a bit of, and we're not, the boys that we're looking for, because we're not a behavioral modification program, we don't have the capacity, we don't have a counselor with us who's you know, talented in that realm. We are looking for boys who just are kind of like doing well or well enough in school, but don't necessarily feel like they're super connected in their school, that they're super like seen. And here's a way for them to really be in an environment where they will definitely be seen. Yeah. You walk with your head down a lot. Okay. Let's strategize what that says and how that communicates to us.
Out of curiosity, since you've been running the program for a while, I'm wondering, do some boys come back?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And I imagine that you follow up with many of the boys that you worked with. Does their experience of their school change after this experience of feeling seen?
The best feeling, the best feedback I get is from a teacher or principal or somebody who knew you know, Joseph before the summer, like maybe in eighth grade and now, or seventh grade and now sees him in eighth grade, or ninth grade, now sees him in 10th grade. What do you guys do over there at Reach? Like, what is this? Because this is definitely a different, a lighter, usually different equals lighter, more confident, happier, you know, Joseph than we had before.
That's great. That's, mm-hmm. I like hearing that. And I think there's so much space and possibility opens up when a person feels that sense of self-esteem and feels that sense of self-assuredness. It's like, okay, well, now from this place, do I want to play a sport? Do I want to join a club? Who do I want to connect with in this class? Maybe I can, there's just way more possibility than when we feel shut down, when we are self-focused in that way of, yeah, keeping our heads down and trying to be small, the world's smaller versus, oh, there's actually people here I might connect with. And maybe I can be safe and maybe I can be seen in this school. That's very inspiring. Okay. And I will drop that in the chat. And then if people are interested in becoming mentors, I would imagine they also just go to the website. And you mentioned the speaker series. Is that solely during the summer or is that also during the school year?
I'd love for that to be during the school year as well. Absolutely. You know, once a month, let's hear somebody come and speak about this. And then let's have a group discussion about it afterwards with the person, you know, break it down. Like, you know, you mentioned this is your challenge number one. This is your second challenge. This is the skills you've learned as a result, how you apply it to your work. But let's dig into this more. That's what we're intending on doing.
That's great. Okay. Well, you might hear from some of our guys.
That'd be awesome. That'd be so awesome. It's thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for the work that you're doing. It's critically important. And I would like to see the proliferation of lots of organizations like yours. So
would I. Yes. Definitely.